Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
First, they wanted to dismantle the atomic bomb. Now, U2 has been caught spying on Iranian music. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We begin with last month's Fez Festival in Morocco, where Bono and U2's guitarist The Edge were seen sitting under a Moroccan oak listening to this Iranian singer, Parisa, and the classical group known as the Dastan Ensemble. Some say that Bono is thinking Middle Eastern music is, or should be, the next big thing for rockers. In the meantime, North African bands are beginning to make their own fusions in the reverse direction. Is it the start of a musical peace in the Middle East? We have a couple of guests, beginning with WNYC's own Rob Weisberg, who was in Fez for the annual Fez Festival last month. So, Rob, you were there. In pretty good company, Bono, Brian Eno, The Edge from U2 as well. What were they doing there?
Well, they were all there for a songwriting session. What they did was they, there's kind of this new thing in Morocco, which is to take these old, beautiful sort of palatial compounds called riads and convert them. Sometimes they're converted into hotels. Some have had intermediate periods as diplomatic residences. In this case, they rented out, you can rent out a whole complex, and they set up their gear in the middle and used it basically as a place to spend some weeks writing songs, and with the idea of going to the festival a bit, hearing some of the music, meeting some of the musicians.
So they turned out to be Parisa fans, if not beforehand, certainly by the end of the week.
Yeah, you know, the person who was sort of more quotable about it, just looking at the YouTube blog, was Eno, who was impressed by, you know, Parisa and her group will do these long sort of 45-minute medleys of pieces that build up in intensity. He was impressed that the lack of traditional verse-chorus structure and just the way that ebbs and flows and builds in kind of this narrative way. And he said that they used, they were inspired by that in such a way that they used sort of Arabic solutions to musical questions as they were writing songs in the studio.
Wow. So the next U2 record, I mean, you may not hear Iranian singing, but there may be some kind of Middle Eastern process used, is what you're saying, in solutions to songwriting problems.
Yeah.
Now, Bono apparently thinks that Middle Eastern music is the next big thing among rockers.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm correct. You know, I may have been slightly to attribute that to him or Eno or the sort of group of them. Mm-hmm. But really, they were talking about, as I was saying, sort of that idea of the process maybe altering. Now, it's interesting. They also made a point on their website of separating it from the more cyclical sub-Saharan African music, which is interesting because when we were about to talk about something, I think that was one of the original African inspirations, the master musician of Djibouti, which may fall more into that category.
Right, where things repeat and just kind of cycle and build up that way.
Yeah.
What these guys were so impressed about with the Middle Eastern music they were hearing in Fez was, as you say, the lack of the usual structures, just a kind of
a verse and chorus.
Yeah, just building over time.
And I think also the intensity and the intensity of her singing.
Well, now, one of the interesting things about the Fez Festival, it started in the wake of the first Gulf War.
Right.
And it's never made any bones about the fact that it is supposed to be more than a music festival. You know, there is always a representation of at least the three Abrahamic faiths, Christianity, Judaism, Islam. Does that make it a particularly compelling place to be, to spend a week?
You know, this is an interesting question because I was also, one of the nice things at a festival like this is cultural exchange. And I was also asked that by some college students who were doing a project there on the cultural exchange at the festival, which I thought was a nice use of the festival. And they said, you know, did you feel the sacred vibe there? And for me, as a fairly secular person, in the festival proper, which is there are sort of two main stages. There's a museum, beautiful museum garden, which is where the U2 guys hung out to see Parisa. And there's also a bigger square.
A palace.
Palace,
yeah.
Really, that's been converted, the outdoor court, this huge outdoor courtyard area. It's the Bob Makina to a stage. And that's where the main sacred events are held. But I didn't really feel, it felt sort of like a normal concert to me there. But there is a separate component of the festival in the evenings of performances by Sufi brotherhoods from around Morocco, who are, Sufi being this mystical Islamic sect, and various places, not just Morocco, but and there you felt, you had that feeling, the audience knew the verses and they were chanting along. And that's kind of where I really got it. That was really exciting to be there, the music sort of in situ, where it comes from. I never really had that experience before.
We're speaking with WNYC producer Rob Weisberg, who was at this year's edition of the annual Fez Festival of World Sacred Music in Fez, Morocco. And also joining us now on the phone is Greg Kot. He's pop music critic at the Chicago Tribune and co-host of the Chicago Public Radio show Sound Opinions. Greg, welcome back.
How you doing, John? Good to be on.
The idea of rockers looking to Middle Eastern music, not really a new thing, is it?
No, it always seems like Bono discovers these things and makes a big deal out of it. You know, like Middle Eastern music's going to be the next big thing. Well, I got news for him. You know, it's been filtering into, you know, Western music for at least 40 years, I mean, in terms of the rock era. So it's been around for quite a while, and the influence has been felt, no doubt about it.
Well, why do you think he and Eno and people like that are noticing it now? I mean, is there something in the air right now that makes it particularly
Well, I think there's generally a feeling that rock music in some ways is, you know, as tried and true as it is sort of running out of ideas. And I think musicians always look outside their own country, their own little provincial musical zone when inspiration is lacking and flagging. I mean, with U2, you're talking about a band that is, you know, well into its third life. As you know, most bands don't make it past 5 years. U2 is now entering like its third decade of music making, and I think it's pretty obvious that they need a shot of inspiration. Their last two albums were very much a back to basics kind of rock and roll records, and I think they're looking to sort of branch out from that on this next record. I think they need to.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't surprise me that they're looking to the East for inspiration, because it seems like musicians have done that for a very, very long time, and that's not unusual for them to come back newly inspired.
Well, and as Rob was saying, you know, this goes back all the way to, you know, Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones, who in 1968 went to Morocco to record the legendary Musicians of Jujuka. Here's a little bit from that 1968 recording. Trancy rhythms of the Master Musicians of Jujuka in Morocco, recorded by Brian Jones about a year before he died. In 1968 he recorded it, died in 69. The album posthumously released in 1971 as Brian Jones Presents the Pipes of Pan at Jujuka. And we're speaking on the phone with Greg Kot from the Chicago Tribune, our own Rob Weisberg, fresh from the Fez Festival here in the studio. And Greg, the this album, you know, made certainly a bit of a splash in the early 70s. Morocco was kind of a hip place for the literati to spend some time. And, you know, when you're a Rolling Stone and you choose to make a recording like this, it does give it a certain cachet. But what impact do you think that this early attempt at bringing East and West together made?
Oh, I think it had a profound effect. I think it introduced a lot of Western ears to music that they'd never heard about or much of. And, you know, it was exotic, and at the same time there was a sense of, I can relate to this. I mean, you know, drums, the chanting, you know, the horns, the way they were playing these instruments wasn't that all that far removed from some of the ecstatic states that the psychedelic era bands were trying to get their fan base into. As I recall with the Jones recording of the Jujuka Musicians, you know, he was using some psychedelic era production effects, like some of the panning and phasing of some of the instruments, you know, to,
right.
to sort of enhance the psychedelic. You know, if you take these proper chemicals in the proper order, you will, you know, you will see God when you put this record on your turntable.
Or at the least, you'll hear the horn that was in your left channel suddenly swishing over to your right channel. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Can you just imagine how mind-blowing that would be? So, you know, Jones was definitely, you know, plugging into some of that. But the larger point is that musicians were drawn to this area of the world as a result of a recording like this being widely circulated on a major record label.
Right.
You know, I know that Ornette Coleman, for a fact, you know, went over there and started recording with some of those guys based on hearing the Jones recording. So, you know, it definitely had an effect.
And just 2 years after the record came out, Robert Plant of Led Zeppelin was driving through the desert in Morocco and wrote the lyrics to the song Kashmir, which, you know, would be released in 75 and which was this kind of anthemic mixing of rock and Middle Eastern sounds. Here's what Robert Plant actually told us about these early explorations. He was on Soundcheck last year talking about himself and Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin.
When Jimmy and I spent time in the back streets of Bombay or in the mountains of the Atlas Mountains in Morocco in 71 with a Nagamichi tape machine taping Berber people in the fields singing about bringing in harvest, you have to understand there's no stages, there's no gigs, but there's song and music. Could I ever have imagined that I could actually ever do anything I wanted to do?
Robert Plant, he mentions 1971, Greg, so, I mean, you would have to say that he was an early adopter.
Oh, yeah. Plant, and, you know, he's a great example of a musician who has always gone to that well for inspiration. I mean, it was all over his last studio record, and as you point out, Kashmir was kind of a groundbreaking track. You know, I know that was one of those records that Zeppelin fans have sort of had this band typecast as a heavy metal band, which was wrong. But you hear a track like Kashmir, and suddenly your mind is in a completely different space, you know. And it's odd because he's name-checking a city, I think, in north of Pakistan, you know, and he wrote the lyrics while driving through the Sahara Desert. So he's
right.
He's sort of like it's sort of this polyglot Eastern type of sound that he's going for. It's not specific to one region, but it was just the whole vibe of that area that he was trying to go for.
Well, it's named after a troublesome area that's been long the subject of a dispute between India and Pakistan, but definitely the sounds of Moroccan and Arabic music, especially towards the end of the song Kashmir. From the 1975 Led Zeppelin album Physical Graffiti, the song is Kashmir, and we're talking about the influence of Middle Eastern music in rock with Greg Kot from the Chicago Tribune and WNYC producer Rob Weisberg, who's recently back from the Fez Festival in Morocco. And Rob, we're talking, you know, in the case of Brian Jones or Led Zeppelin, Robert Plant more recently as a soloist, about rockers kind of embracing the sounds of Middle Eastern music, Bono and Eno sitting under that Moroccan oak tree at the Fez Festival taking in the sounds. But you found that it's working in reverse too,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. You know, and one nice thing about the festival, the reason I got to see some of this, is that they've established a few free stages now in addition to the ticketed concerts. Ticketed concerts tend to draw mostly European audiences. Free concerts, many more local people. And on one of the free stages in particular, a lot of Moroccan music, both sort of electric traditional styles, but also some younger bands that are making new fusions. And that was what particularly caught my attention. And there really is a band that's kind of right back at you. It's this band called Darga. And paradoxically, whereas, you know, and you two are kind of looking at the, you know, more Middle Eastern structure, they're actually looking at the sub-Saharan structure. The influence, particularly of Nawa music, which is
These are the traditional healers. Traditional healers.
And this music really comes via sub-Saharan Africa through Mauritania. There's a huge festival in another city, Essaouira. It's really influenced a lot of bands. And Darga have really kind of followed on that influence and worked it into some of their songs.
All right, let's hear a little bit. Recorded in Fez, Morocco, the band Darga. The band is Darga. They were part of this year's Fez Festival, although that recording actually not from this year's Fez Festival itself. But Rob Weisberg from WNYC and also a host on WFMU in New Jersey, back from the Fez Festival. So this is an example of a band using traditional North African slash Near Eastern musical roots and obviously a very strong rock influence as well.
They're an interesting combo package, actually, because they sort of do rock, ska. They do some songs on traditional Nawa instruments, not that song. I wanted to play that because it was a real fusion of the two.
Right. What about the band called Amarg Fusion,
Yes, this is a different side of Moroccan music and something that's been going on in Algeria, but less in Morocco, which is popular fusions of traditional Amazi or Berber music. The Berber, 65% of people in Morocco have Berber blood, but there's a lot of sort of separate but equal stuff. The Berber language isn't really taught. And there's a little bit of a cultural revival going on. And I think this band, Amarg Fusion, who are based in Agadir, right near stronger Berber territory, they've all gone and done field study kind of to the south of them, where the music kind of comes from. And they've worked this into their songs.
Uh-huh. So this is kind of like, you know, the Cajun revival in Louisiana. It's like, you know, cultural pride at work here in addition to making music. Yeah. Let's hear a little bit. The band's called Amarg Fusion. Band's called Amarg Fusion, and aside from the Berber language lyrics and the traditional fiddle, that could pass for any kind of generic light rock.
Yeah, although, you know, it's funny, live they used heavy metal guitar licks.
So, okay.
They, you know, but yes, they're a fairly polished type of group. It's different. Darga is definitely, they have a more indie edge. They actually are inspired by some French bands. So.
But avoiding the cheese factor, the cheesiness, that is the real, that's the thing you have to watch for, no matter which direction this fusion of rock and Middle Eastern is going in.
Sure.
And Greg Kot, let me ask you, if people like Bono and Eno are beginning to look east towards the Near East again in a serious way, you know, can they start a new trend and can they avoid that cheesy factor?
Oh, where Bono goes, millions follow, don't
they? That's true enough.
You know? I mean, he's one of those guys that is going to be a world leader, whether everybody wants him to be or not. But, you know, it sounds like he's serious about incorporating some of this music into U2's next record. And it makes a lot of sense, as I said, because some of the stuff that they've been doing lately sounds a little tired. It sounds like 25-year-old music. I think this music sounds fresh to Bono right now, and that's probably the reason for the inspiration.
And, of course, his longtime producer or co-producer, Brian Eno, has been a big fan of different types of world music and is probably serious enough about it to not do anything too cheesy.
Well, frankly, I'd love to see what Eno has to do with it. You know, I think if he's involved, I think it's got a chance to be really exciting because it's going to be some kind of a hybrid. These guys are smart enough and probably not talented enough either to do an exact replica of this stuff. But the interesting stuff occurs when you do get these kind of cultural fusions and these kind of mistakes. You know, I was trying to do A, but I ended up sounding like B, and that's when the music starts to move forward.
All right. Greg Kot, pop music critic at the Chicago Tribune, co-host of Chicago Public Radio's Sound Opinions. Greg, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely, John.
And Rob Weisberg is host of Trans-Pacific Sound Paradise on WFMU and a producer here at WNYC. Rob, welcome back from Fez. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much.
And we'll leave you with a little bit of music that attempts to incorporate the Middle East and the West, and it's music from Sting.